FM stack all linked together in a very intricate manner of computerizing the system so that it could be optimized whether you wanted to do a whole bunch, you know, all six of them or lower ones, or upper ones, or this thing and that. So this is quite an ongoing project with I don't want to even think about the cost of this project. It's phenomenal. But the one I'm talking about, I spoke to a guy up in New Hampshire that I know, Woody. He put that up on his tower. He's also got a tower that's about 175 feet tall. He's got the two of them. He's got the 40-meter version and then the other version, the 20-meter, 15-10 version, whatever it is. And he's got also the 80-meter one up there. And boy, oh boy, he is literally king of the band. I'll tell you that much, Joe.
Yeah, I'm looking for the website now. The guy's call letters are K9LTN, Kilowatt 9, Lima, Tango, November. And I'm going to get you the website. When you see the pictures of this thing, it's going to really blow your mind.
Horizontally, and that's what it seemed to resemble, because it doesn't seem to have a horizontal size of an 80-meter antenna. And I didn't even ask him what the boom length was and thing, but that's another expensive item.
Yeah.
And to have a few of those things stacked, you got to have some serious money.
Yeah, I found the website. It's www.kilo9limatangonovember.com/gallery, G-A-L-L-E-R-Y, 2, gallery number 2, numeral 2, / M-A-I-N, dot Papa Hotel Papa. I think you'll also find it under just whiskey dot Kilo 9 Lima Tango November dot com. And I'm going there right now to see if I can see what I think is the picture that starts us all off. You got to go there, Joe. This is the ultimate use of stepper antennas.
I couldn't reply. I was just parked in somebody's car while I was off right next to me, so it was taking me out as far as the microphone. I didn't catch all that address. I just have to listen to the net on that other site that was the net. Unless you can email it to me, I think you have one of my email addresses anyway. I would like to look at that guy's array. And is he using the 40-meter version of these antennas or or a combination of the 40 and 20-meter version?
He's using the 20-meter version. He's got them stacked three alongside of three. Three vertically stacked left side of the boom, left side of the mast, and three vertically stacked right side of the mast. And his diagram shows that he intends to put in the center a 40-meter one. And I was telling him, don't do it, because I found what I think is a physical weakness in the way he set up the welds on the way he put that antenna together. However, I've just gone to those particular websites that I just gave you, and somebody has taken over that website and put in an advertisement for some other kind of business. I don't know how the hell that happened, but somebody took over his website and put some other business in there. Maybe it's his business, but right now I'm not finding his antenna pictures. I'm going to keep searching. It looks like an insurance company took over the website. Back to you, Mel. H-U-L-A-W.
I remember looking at it. Quite something. Very impressive. This is K-2-K-E-Y. There's a number of them on the air already that are quite impressive arrays. If you look at WW1WW, my friend Woody, and he's in New Hampshire. He's put this 75 foot of tower up, rotating tower, and he's got a number of the antennas on there. Nothing, you know, stacked to that extent, but a number of different bands and frequency, starting out with an 80 meter three element on top of the tower. So they just keep going and going. It's not going to take. Got the kind of money and the land and everything like that. The sky's the limit, over.
It sure is. This installation looks to me like it's about $250,000 worth. 180 feet of Rhone 65 tower is the main vertical support. The main horizontal support is something like 80 feet of Rhone 65 tower. The vertical support of Rhone 55 tower, with Rhone 25 on the tip. So he's got towers, he's using towers as mast and boom material, so to speak, to support all these endeavors. Hire this huge crane to put this thing all together. Very big operation. Right now I'm Googling K9 Lima Tango November to see if I can find a website that will show the pictures. As I said, the original website looks like insurance company took them over. You got to help.
This is KEY, yeah, Roger. Yeah. As you said, it's quite an investment. I know the guy who did the crane work for Woody, the fire crane was $5,000 because I spoke to him. And, was doing another crane job here in the area, lifting a section of a prefabricated house, and I asked him, I said, what do you charge for that? He says, I'll lift anything up to, I forgot how many tons, and he says, but $5,000 a day, 24-hour, to hire the crane. So, give you an idea, Dick, what's involved in one of these projects. It's phenomenal. All right, should we look at one more, Dick?
Absolutely. I'm still looking for this website, and go ahead and proceed.
Okay, I'm just looking down here. Here's an interesting one. You mentioned, Mel, about building a 2-meter J pole, and you said all the materials, you made it out of materials you got for Home Depot. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that was on that. See, I think we're not doing this. We did this already. But all right, I'll give you what I... Oh, yes, that was the copper chain pole I built. Okay, I got it now. If you remember, Dick, we discussed this about building antennas using, instead of aluminum tubing, copper tubing, and soldering everything together. You want to know if it stood up, this antenna. Well, I don't have it anymore. I gave it to a friend of mine, but yes, it was a all put together, soldered together, J-pole, made of copper pipe. I don't remember, Dick, did you say anything negative about doing that by that method over?
You can do it, but I don't recommend it. Copper is about twice the weight of aluminum and a hell of a lot more expensive. And with proper use of materials, you don't gain anything. If you're building a Yagi-like antenna, and if your all of your materials are aluminum, and if your individual elements are insulated from the boom by way of shoulder bushings or blocks of plastic on top with pop rivets, which is the way I designed the original RIW-19 antenna, once you do that, aluminum elements and aluminum boom gives you a nice light antenna that has a lot of longevity to it. I've seen antennas that are built out of copper tubing and soldered elements and whatever, and that's the other approach, which is a lot less adaptable for adjustment, and it's a lot heavier and a lot more expensive, and you don't get more performance out of it. So I won't say it won't work. I'm just saying I don't recommend it. It's not the best use of available materials, in my opinion. I did find a picture of this antenna. There's a website which shows you really big antennas. The 7J4 Alpha Alpha Lima antenna, which is a five element fully rotating 80 meter beam. 7J4 Alpha Lima. Alpha Alpha Lima has three pictures on the site, and the fourth picture is the K9 LTN antenna. So the really big antennas are on this site, and it's not too big an email address. So when Joe's ready to write, I can give him that email address. Which, by the way, all you have to do is do a search with Google of K9 Lima Tango November antennas, and about the fifth item that comes up with Google is this particular website. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Well, the biggest antenna array of all, it was actually, I don't know, we still hold the record, that's really the biggest, is the Monty Lane, of course, OH2BH, the famous DX. I've worked them in, I don't know, 50 different DX locations, all the rare DX locations. He's the guy, where do we go next? He wrote the book, and I talked to him, and I could say, most like 50 different locations. And that's where he comes from, Finland. He has, take a look at his site, it's beyond comprehension. Of course, here, close by, K3CLR, if you take a look at what he's got, a tower, a field of towers with some extremely big arrays on there. K3CLR is in Pennsylvania, so I'm going to take a ride, just get away and take a look at what he's got there. I understand it's quite impressive. Let me let it drop.
And tell me if this call letters once again for the Finland station.
OH2BH, Monty Lane.
Okay, I'm going to look him up. How big was his rotatable antenna, Mel? What band was it on?
OH2BH, he's got everything. He covers everything. I don't know how many different bands he covers, but I think he's got it all from 160 right through. He is the number one DXer. And I can say, all the rare, really big DX expeditions. Monty Lane is the guy who's in charge of them. He really runs the real DXing has really been over the last number of years with Monty Lane involved over.
Okay, I'm looking him up right now. Somebody, I think, just called in for us, Mel.
Okay, go ahead, the station.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Frank, WB2BX. So, I think the Pennsylvania station you're referring to is K3 Lima Radio. Dan.
Frank, you dropped out. If you're still there, you moved around or whatever, you dropped out of repeater.
I think the Pennsylvania station you're referring to in Pennsylvania is K3 Lima Radio, not Charlie Lima Radio. Am I right?
Yeah, you may be right. I may have added a C in there. I don't know where I got there. K3LR. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. In fact, he's the one who designed a number of antenna systems, Dick. I think he's the guy who sells the bi-square system, or designed the bi-square, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, K3LR. I believe Frank is correct, Dick, over.
Yeah, I'm looking at the QSL card of OH0BH. I looked up OH2, and I'm seeing an OH0, but I think I'm looking at a 6-element Yagi on what might be 80 meters. It's a really big antenna. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, that's Monty Lane. I think it's called OH2BH. Frank, what Monty Lane call over?
Yes, it is Marty, M-A-R-T-T-I, O-H-2-B-H.
That's him. Yeah, that's him. That's Marty Lane. I got a number of his QSL cards with his picture on it, all team ICOM and all the goodies and all that kind of stuff. And like I say, I've got at least, I don't know, maybe 50 different rare DX locations that he's operated from. I've worked them all as goes on to see a different DX expedition, but his home station is, I can't the last words, because it is a heck of a big signal out of Europe. I can tell you that, Dick. Over.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of hits with him on Google, and I've now got to pin it down to, I see another OH2BH QSL card. And by the way, he's got cards from his de-expedition. It looks like he's gone to 30 different countries in the world. W2JGR, how about that? It's one of the QSL cards he's got here. I'm looking at one of his towers. It looks like it's got stacked rotating beams with ring rotators on it. I'm still trying to find out how big his antenna is, and does it compare to the 180-foot of boom length on the five-element fully rotated 80-meter beam of a 7J, or is it a Alpha Alpha Lima? I'll eventually find the picture. Back to you, Mel.
I wouldn't be surprised. Marty Lane is, I guess, say the number one DXer in the world, and so I think if it is available, can exist, or whatever, he's got it there. I know he's got all rotatable towers, all have those rotating, those slip rings, and the tower systems are all rotating at his location. All right, getting back to the J-pole. Well, I built the J-pole, Dick, out of copper. Actually, when I went to Home Depot, they have a bin there, but they cut off, and I found pieces very cheap for a few dollars. I bought the whole thing about, it was about $15 worth of material, and I soldered the J-pole together. So you don't have to, you know, start looking around, ship aluminum and all. For an antenna like this J-pole, it's wound up about 60 inches, you know, and complete length of 2 meters. I think it's very doable with the, you get all the couplings and everything very simply, Dick, over.
In the case of a J-pole, it does make more sense to make it out of copper. But I thought you were referring to a Yagi. I don't recommend building Yagis out of copper. But a J-pole, yes. Where you can solder all the joints and make nice connections, that is an easier material to use for that kind of antenna than aluminum. I'm going to agree with you on that one, Mel.
I could say with J-pole, there's a lot of different pieces, you know, go together. You got the top section, and then you got a T that you got to put in there, and you know, pieces, elbows, and all. I found that making a J-pole out of copper and being able to solder and getting all those different, you know, things like T's and right angles and caps and all, caps and tops and things, and, you know, getting different sizes, because I use 3/4 inch as the main vertical, and then the J piece I made out of half inch copper, and I was able to get a 3/4 to 1/2 inch T coupling, all sitting there, right, like I say, and if you look at the bins there where they have cutoff pieces, you can buy the material very cheap. So if I remember, it was under $20 to put the whole J pole together out of copper, and my friend took it, and he's been using it now in PA quite successfully for many years. I guess it's at least 10 years old, Nick, over.
Sounds like fun. Now, most of us seem to want a little bit of extra gain that you can get out of a J-pole. J-pole's a nice omnidirectional antenna. But if you really wanted some directivity, squirt a little bit more signal into a particular direction, I think you eventually start building Yagis. And when it comes to 2-meter Yagis, a very simple one can be built out of strips of wood and coat hanger wire. But the more sophisticated ones do use aluminum tubing and aluminum elements. Your tallest, your highest gain 2-meter antenna is what kind of an antenna mount?
Well, you know, I have that 2-meter antenna that I use at the field day, especially. I take it to the field day. It's that one that was that K1FO Steve put together. I can say, I think the design, if I remember the design of these antennas, was there a W1, was it EKJ or something like that, that did the original design? Is that ring of bell with you, Dick, over?
There was a moonbounce operator that K1FO was working with when he perfected the so-called K1FO Yagi. His first major Yagi breakthrough, which was done by a combination of starting off with the DL6WU design and doing a bunch of computer modeling, was the so-called FO-22, a 432 Yagi with 22 elements. That's Steve's most famous antenna. And then he backtracked from that to build 2-meter versions and a bunch of other versions. But an extremely successful Yagi design. What's nice about the Gunter Hawk DL6WU designs is that his original antenna had, let me think, I think it was 15 elements, his major 432 Yagi, 15 elements. And the taper of the elements was such that you got a little bit of extra bandwidth, near maximum gain, a little bit of extra bandwidth from normal Yagi design, but the design was so forgiving, you could build any number of elements of the design. In other words, with a 15-element design, you could decide to build 5, 7, 9, 13, or whatever elements of it. And in all cases, you got near-top performance for that length. Very few Yagi designs have that kind of forgivingness to making modifications. Back to you, Mel.
Roger, this is KTY. Well, I built the 10-element version, and I understood from the design that you could easily get, would you believe that they, if I'm not mistaken, well, maybe when I more or less looked at the design on MiniNet and everything, that I don't know, is it really possible that you get at least 11 to 12 dB kind of a thing? 10 element design of it, over.
Yeah, if you go to the right article indoor website of DL6WU, which are in the German magazine, Dubus, D-U-B-U-S, I think it is, which is the German abbreviation for UHF or VHF, UHF, or microwave. He's got a bunch of articles in which he shows you the exact gain for boom length. And what Gunter has come up with is a beautiful formula, which I used to have in my calculator that gave me some trouble. I didn't load it into the new calculator, but one of his articles is that you plug in the exact boom length in wavelength, and if you put an optimum Yagi of directors and reflectors and driven elements on that boom, they'll tell you exactly what gain you're supposed to get. So there's a direct formula, and it goes up logarithmically. You get very close to 3 dB increase in gain every time you double the boom length. And so I do know that 19 elements, 18 and 19 elements, can give you 15 dB of gain over dipole. I do know that 3 very well-tuned elements can give you 6 dB of gain over isotropic. And I guess we can figure out a proportion in between. I think you're asking, how much gain can we get for 5 elements? And I think the answer is around 10 or 11 dB over isotropic, which is around 9 dB of gain over dipole for 5 elements. Rough rule of thumb. Mel, go ahead.
Hey, this is page 2KY. Well, I built the 10-element version, and I was asking that, in other words, it is more or less correct when I did check with the MiniNet design on that particular antenna system, and in fact I had all that, like I say, all that rate shield all plugged in there at the time. It was part of a program that came with it, and they claimed up somewhere around 11 dB over dipole on the 10 element version. So I guess it's it is possible that it will give you at least that gain of dB over a dipole version.
I agree with you, Mel. That is the right ballpark. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. K2KEY. All right. Sounds like antennas together. And in fact, you know, I built the elephant. That was unstuckable. Another one of mine. So I picked up the from TV antennas. So it'd be discarded. I just have to be able to clean them up and everything. Yes, but they made a perfect source of elements, very lightweight elements and all, and very easy to handle. A lot of people don't. Old TV antennas would seem to be constantly in the street, make an excellent source of aluminum for it, over.
And for bands like 2 meters and above, absolutely. If you use television aerial elements, which are rolled pieces of aluminum tubing, in other words, it's a flat piece of strip of aluminum rolled into a tube and there's a notch along one edge. And if you use those television aerial elements for building 6 meter beams, I don't know if you would get good longevity when it comes to ice loading in the wintertime. I think it would give you some grief. The materials are cheap, that's the good news. But I would use those materials on 2 meters and above. Have you ever used television aerial elements on 6 meters, and did it survive very long? No, go ahead.
Believe it or not, I did. You know, if you look at the long elements on a lot of TV antennas, they are just about 450 megahertz. And I have used them. In fact, I even, you know, I've taken them off and used them with the insulator, you know, that plastic, you know, because you know how those antennas went together. You just unfold them, and they snapped into place. And I basically salvaged, just even used the boom. To tell you the truth, the television boom, that square boom that they used, you know, with the clamp in the middle, I salvaged it, just cleaned it all up, you know, sprayed it up or whatever, made it look good. But they lasted pretty good. I have never had one really come apart, Dick. That you'd be amazed at. It looks like they're not the best of materials, how they constructed them, yet you see they, many of them stay up for so many years, it's unbelievable, over.
Yeah, when I get a real good ice storm, though, quite often I'll lose the Channel 2 elements on some of my television aerials. So it's pushing your luck a little bit. Lucky for you, you're closer to the seashore, and my guess is you probably only get an ice storm once every 20 years. Is that true, Mel?
No, I can only remember one ice loading here on the tower many years ago. We had that one crazy storm. I remember it broke the limbs of the tree because there was so much ice on the branches of the tree. Remember that was, oh, that was the perfect storm. I remember that now. That we remember that thing was the perfect storm when the ice loading it only lasted a day, I mean, but it broke limbs off the trees all over the place. That was the only time I ever saw I saw the big beach with the drooping elements on. It was stalagmite hanging from it. In fact, I wouldn't let anyone in the backyard except the kids out of the yard not to look at this thing. But they look like spears ready to come down on you. And that was the only time that, since then, I think that was a once in a century, over.
I had a fairly severe ice storm in 1977, as I remember, which knocked out power for a couple of days. And yes, the very heavy loading of ice broke up a hell of a lot of trees. And I was sharing my little putt-putt generator with me and the next-door neighbor, and also periodically running over to my grandmother's house and running her furnace and trying to keep her house from freezing. It was wintertime, January, late January of around 1977. Now, maybe you didn't get as much ice where you are, but boy, we got a lot of it in my neighborhood, go ahead.
I guess places upstate New York and all, they're very used to these types of conditions. I know my friend Pennsylvania told me many a time that 75-meter contact in the wintertime, oh, I tell them about, oh, we got 3 inches of snow. We said, 3 inches? We got that in the last hour, you know, or whatever. I mean, you know, weather conditions in a lot of places, we're fairly, along the east coast here, we're fairly, you know, comfortable with the weather. In winter, it gets cold in all of us. You know, our cold is like a warm day to them. I mean, that's unbelievable, you know, when you start listening to people and they start telling you what the weather conditions are like. Not far, I got Ohio or places that get on the air with us on 75 meters, Dick. It's amazing that the difference a few hundred miles makes, over.
I have on one or two occasions seen a temperature at my house that around minus 10 or minus 12 Fahrenheit. I'll bet you you almost never get below zero at your QTH. Is that true, Mel?
So I've never seen it at zero. No, the lowest I remember ever seeing it here is, I think it was 8 degrees or something of that sort. I remember once it dipped below the 10 degree mark, but just slightly below, maybe down to 8. But that was, so many years ago. I will honestly tell you, did we really have been real frost this past winter? You know, I don't remember really a heavy cold spell like we used to have years ago. Gee, I don't know why I remember so many snowstorms years ago, and this past year, one time I took out the snow thrower just to play with it, but there wasn't very much really in the way of snow even this past year, Dick, over.
Same here. This is a mild winter. Enough for people start talking about global warming because of it. Yeah, I suspect you're so close to the sea that you run a healthy 10 degrees warmer than I do on many winter days. And on really hot summer days, you probably run 10 degrees cooler than me. So you got pretty moderate temperature down there. The only thing you got to worry about is I'll bet you get a fair amount of salt spray. So if you're not careful with the trace of materials, like all of your nuts and bolts better be stainless. If you use ordinary steel outside, my guess is you can get some pretty heavy rust. Is that true, Mel?
It eats up everything. There, along the edge here, the water, there was a walkway. And there was like a pipe, you know, railing. And it just disappeared. The pieces that you see left there, you can walk over and just crumple them off. Okay, you'd be amazed the way you see the pipe that swells up with like bumps all over it and then begin to really deteriorate. That's with the painting and everything. I have the salt just gets inside and destroys everything. Well, anywhere along the bay here, they've replaced the railing many times. It's only good for a few years. I don't know. I think they're experimenting with something new now, some new material and all, but past that galvanized metal that they've used, they put paint on it and all. Plus the same thing with the tower here. The tower was galvanized and all. I saw it dust the pit here, and I gave it a coat of zinc chromate some years ago, and then I have aluminum paint over that. And if I don't keep after the tower and everything like that, it would be a rust, this big rusted piece of junk here, over.
Yep. I can get away with a little bit more of that, but I have to make sure that everything on my tower is either galvanized or stainless. I'm always amazed when I see these antenna radicals from the guys who live in the Mojave Desert in California. They like making booms out of wood with elements they stick through the wood. And in a dry desert environment, that's great. But where you and I live, where we get a fair amount of rain and moisture and whatever, wood would be a sagging material, a rotting material, and when it's water-soaked, it would be a lofty material. So I don't use wood on my antennas. The guys in California, Southern California, can do that if they like. Back to you, Mel.
Marine wood, though.
Yeah, there are some special woods you could use, but I know I'm getting a lot more strength to weight ratio out of aluminum tubing. So when it comes to towers, I insist that they be steel. I've seen too many towers made out of aluminum that give grief. But when it comes to antennas, I prefer 6061
T6
aluminum.
Thank
you, Mel.
Yeah, this is KY, you're right. Aluminum towers, I have an aluminum tower, but it's a small one. And all I can tell you that I wouldn't put a heck of a lot of weight on it. I wouldn't stick a big beam like I have on top of it. Getting away with a small beam, like maybe a 2 meter, might a 2 meter, 6 meter beam and all, but maybe even a 10 meter beam, but anything more than that, this beam here is a big, heavy thing, you know, with that big rotor up there that tail twists the rotor and all. That's not for an aluminum tower. All right, anyhow, let's see, 4 to 12. Want to try one more?
Yep, we started as early as we could tonight for the write-ins, and we're covering those. I'd like to believe you're going to get a little bit less slack, but bear in mind you can't please everybody all the time. I think you're going to get flack no matter what we do, Mel. Even though we give warning, that this technet is intended primarily for verbal call-in. And because you're so darn nice, you're volunteering to answer people's written questions, but my goodness, is there a limit? Anybody who writes in to us, they should recognize the fact that there's a high risk you might not get an answer. We're not guaranteeing anybody they're going to get free consulting service. They're certainly not going to get marketing surveys of ham radio rigs. K2KEY, K2LIW.
This is K2KEY, yeah, Roger. Okay, we got a question here from us. I should say a senior citizen, but more of a senior citizen than you guys. Oh, God. And I have having some hearing problems. What do you recommend in the way of headphones? Oh, boy, that is really hard to answer, but I can only tell you what I've done with headphones. I have a pair of headphones that I bought that started to have a little problem also listening to CW and found that headphones make the difference for me. But let me hear what your comments are about headphones first. Go ahead, Luke.
Yeah, when it comes to picking a weak signal in the noise, any other extraneous noise in the room is going to hurt. So a good set of earphones that fit over your ears pretty nicely and close out most of the sound in the room is very helpful. And there are some so-called sound-canceling earphones made by Bose, among other companies, a little bit spicy, but they do an even better job. But you can easily arrange it so that only the signals coming out of your rig get to your ears. There are some people who like these things that plug into the ear itself. I'm not in favor of those, because I think most of them, except for the very expensive ones, are kind of limited in frequency response. They're a little bit hidden. Whereas the real cuppy earphones that go over your ears, that have inside of them a small loudspeaker, they're capable. The modern ones with good magnets in them, neodymium iron or samarium cobalt magnets, are capable of small size, high efficiency. Radio Shack, among other people, sell some pretty good ones. So once you're sure that the sounds coming out of your rig are getting into your ears and not room noises, then after that, the only other thing left is to build some kind of a audio shaper network. You know, one of these things that's got a whole lot of slide rule pots to it, where you can adjust the amplitude of the low, medium, and high frequencies. And so every one of us who doesn't have perfect hearing has certain frequencies that work better than others. So with one of these equalizer, audio equalizer networks, you can make your earphone emphasize the frequencies that work best for your particular hearing system. So those are some of the things that I would do if I was hearing impaired. And one last thing, let me drop. Be a little bit careful about not blasting your ears. I know somebody who was a little bit hard of hearing, and he loved listening to super weak signals in the noise. He would compensate by turning up the volume real loud. It is my belief that he aggravated the hearing loss because he was blasting his ears with very high volume sound. So, avoid really strong sounds, because in my opinion they can do damage. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Alright, well, let me tell you, I started to have, I don't say hearing loss, but I found that I couldn't really, I can say you got the frequency response and all, but I have never listened to, you know, very loud music or anything of that sort. But I found that Heil, H-E-I-L, makes a very good pair of headphones that have on it a sound deadening. In other words, a lot of people listening, they complain that the noise around them seems to affect them when they're listening to, you know, the radio, like CW or whatever, or single sideband, and that they have built into it a sound deadening system, a little switch that you clip on as a battery, a AA battery in it, and it's made by Heil Sound. Now, There is a, I believe there was a number of ideas that came out. It was a headphone type mixer that you could buy and to plug the phones in, and I believe, and you could more or less adjust up the audio, in other words, pick the audio up. I know Pinewave, I believe, makes it, Dick. But have you ever heard of these Kyle sound-ending headphones, over?
I guess I was aware that Heil made such a thing. Mine is Bose, and the Bose one is around $250. Works reasonably well, and it works on a AAA battery, but it's kind of pricey. I'd like to believe the Heil is a little bit less expensive. Would you call it a noise-canceling system? In other words, it cancels noise of the room, but emphasizes the noise coming down the cord. Go ahead.
Roger. Yeah, it cancels the noise, surrounding noise. In the room, especially if you have like the radios with fans on it. That's basically what it's really good for, because the fan noise in the room sometimes, you know, when you really start listening to weak signals and start turning up the gain and everything like that, sort of straining your ears. So if there's noise in the room from, like I say, things like fans and all, this will blank it out. So they're a little bit more reasonable. They're approximately, I think, around $100 or so. And you can get them in a number of versions. You can get them with the microphone also mounted on the phone if you want. And you know, so you don't have to hold the microphone. They have a number of versions, but if you look at the Heil Sound, H-E-I-L Sound, I think you'll find what you're really looking for. And Pinewave, I believe, has a number of these gadgets that you plug in, a unit that you can plug into the audio output of the rig, of the receiver, and more or less also treat the audio stick over.
Roger. So Soundwave is the kind of an equalizer, is what I think you're talking about. And that Heil for $100 sounds like you get a lot more for your money. Bose makes a good product, but kind of pricey. So, yeah, these equalizers, I think they've only got around 10 dB of boost and 10 dB of buck on the frequencies that when you slide the slider up and down. And I guess most of the time that's enough. And depending on which kind of equalizer you use, some of those equalizers are just a boost and buck of treble and bass. But there's other versions which have got about 5 or 10 sliders where you can take quite a few individual frequency readjusts to decide how much you're going to emphasize that. I'd like to start using one of those. An amateur on Long Island who used to run the net called the Simplex Net 147575, a guy named Frank, had really done a lot of experimenting on audio, and he had some very rich-sounding audio, but he did proper equalization with a good mic. And I'd like to do that, because this particular rig, I know, is the audio is a little bit mushy, and I'd like it to have a little bit more a little more punch to it. I'm going to start doing some experimenting on that one of these days. Quite a few of us could make audio improvements. I'm worried that the microphones, as they get older on these rigs, lose a little bit of frequency response, or maybe the tantalum capacitors dry out. I noticed that some of our older rigs, the high-frequency nodes are definitely lacking on what we're sending on FM. K2KEY, K2LIW.
K2LIW. Joe, go ahead, please.
I wasn't paying too much attention. I just heard the word equalizer come up. I use a pair of those on my repeater, my uplink and downlink RF links to the repeater for the IRLP, and they work out very good. They able to get a flat response of about 320 hertz up to about past 3,500.
What brand name of equalizer are you using, Joe, and roughly how many dollars?
Cheap. Real cheap. I bought a bunch of them a couple of years ago. I still got quite a few of them, actually. Radio Shack, simple two-channel stereo equalizer, and I paid like $20 a piece for them.
Sure, it'd be nice if Radio Shack still sold it, but I know the problem. They got a whole bunch of them on a sale somewhere, and they sold them, and it's no longer a product that's in their catalog, I'll bet. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. I have a box full of it. Are you in dire need of one or something? You know, you want to get your hands on cheap?
Let me see if I can get the equalizer I own flying. If not, I'm going to take you up on that deal, Joe.
I bought much more than I could possibly use it for. You know, at one time I had a radio, fairly loud repeater system set up with boating and so forth, so I had to, you know, I had some flights equalized back and forth, but I never used the full content of the ones I bought, and I still have, I still got a good handful of things brand new in the box for what I paid for them. You know, that's all I'd be looking for, so it's a cheap item, and they work well, very well for that. And I believe the response is, I'm trying to remember, it's like 60 hertz, 150, 400, 1,000, 2.4. I can't remember the other range, but up at least about 13 or 15,000 on a high-end slider.
Very nice. Very nice. Sounds good. I may take you up on that later on, but the one I own is not adequate. Back to you, Mel. Okay. Got my processor turned on. Here's what I sound like with my processor turned on. Ain't that mushy audio? And here's the processor turned on. K2KEY, K2RIW.
82HWW with a
comment. Go ahead, Allie.
Talk about audio. Remember you're going through a repeater, so you have to take into account what the repeater is doing to your audio.
I agree with you, but I can listen directly on the output of my rig, and I wish there were more highs there, so there's a double loss. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, very good. This is K2KEY. Yeah, fine, this is all right. as I said, there's a number of, to answer the person's question, there's a number of things that are on the market now for a so-called senior citizen. That having more or less trouble listening to their receivers. And I think that, not mistaken, I believe MFJ has also got a product on the market. But if you really want to try something that seems to have worked quite well, at least in my case, if you look into the Heil headphones and look for the ones with the sound deadening, possibility that this will be all you need for the time being. I mean, yeah, I don't know the severity, of course, of your hearing problem, but for me to listen to CW, I find that they're indispensable. They work phenomenally well. This is just a very simple, quick fix. Just plug them in and you're in business. All right, Dick, I'm here for midnight, so maybe you want to close it up for tonight because I haven't got anything really simple here right now. Over.
Okay, if you go on through the ones that are easy to handle, I guess we'll call it quits for tonight. This was TechNet number 1200 of the series that began in September of 1982. Ain't that amazing? 1200 TechNet. And as long as Mel and I stay healthy, we'll be back next week. And try to do more of the same. Be kind to each other. See you guys down the lawn. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Hey, this is K2KEY. I hope everybody will be satisfied with the format that we're doing right now. We're spending a little more time on emails and try to answer some of the other questions as brief as possible. But please, if you got your comments, take it easy on us, please. I will not answer each one individually. As Dick said, the price is right, so this is what we're trying to do the best, is draw off the cuff and spontaneous, and hopefully we can continue with Dick so we can take in pretty good shape, hopefully, for a while. We'll try to, you know, keep this going. 73 is all. Take care. Thank you again for joining us. This is 82KDY. Back over to you, Dick.
Bye-bye, you all.